this portion of our study, as we've gotten to the latter part here of the book of Ecclesiastes, and we really are kind of in the wind down phase here of our study of Ecclesiastes. Solomon's giving some advice. I mean, all the way through, he hasn't necessarily given advice. He has given perspective, perhaps. But now he's kind of in that phase here where he's really giving some advice on life. And at this point, really the difference between just existing in life or really living life. You know, there is quite a difference there. I mean, we can choose to just kind of work our way through life in such a way that life is hardly life at all. That there's nothing special to life, that we find no happiness, no excitement in life. And I'm certainly not convinced that that's what God intends for us to do or to be. And that's certainly not what Solomon is suggesting. I mean, we have seen even in the earlier chapters, there were times where he emphasized the importance of enjoying the work of your hands, enjoying what you've done and accomplished in life. At the same time, he was saying, vanity of vanities, it's all going to go away. But at the same time, he's saying that what's in front of you and what you have worked for and what you enjoy these things. In chapter 10, 11, 12, that seems to be heightened even more. And part of it, even as he looks at his own life and realizes that he's in the latter years or time of his life, he's understanding even all the more the need of understanding life as it is given to you. And so he has some advice then for us, for those who are young and for those who are old. There's advice to be found here. The difference between just existing in life or really living life. We got into chapter 11 on Wednesday night in this part of our study, and we're taking up here around verse 5, where he said, as you do not know the path of the wind or how the body is formed in the mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. We talked about that a little bit on Wednesday night, and I wanted us to back up on that and maybe get a little more perspective and some more comments about what is he saying here. Think carefully about what Solomon is saying when he says, and you do not know the path of the wind or how the body is formed in the mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. There's several thoughts that come to my mind as points that stand out in the passage. But I'm wondering what you think about that. What do you see? What is Solomon trying to tell us about life?
That verse is right in the middle of the verses previous that we talked about benevolence. Mm-hmm. Verse 6 is also, I think, talking about sowing your seed in the morning, which would be when you're young, and also in the evening when you're old. I think he's saying, just as we don't understand the path of the wind and how the bones are formed in the womb, we won't know the end result of our good works and our benevolence. We may not fully understand what the full outcome is going to be. Just rest assured that God does, and if we do it, it will have its fruit.
It's kind of amazing to think about that in life. You know, we may go through life, and perhaps there's been some work we've done that as we get older, we can stand back and we can go, wow, that really worked out good. And you find satisfaction in some accomplishments as that. Well, what about some things that come to their fruition, come to the greatest accomplishment after we're gone? I mean, there's some things that we might not even see that hopefully is an accomplishment for good. That's a point that can be made.
A lot of us think of what he says in verse 4, he who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks at the clouds will not reap. It's so easy to find reasons not to do things and try to plan our lives according to what we think might happen or might not happen. And I think the point of this passage is that God, you can't know what God has in mind and what has in store, and you just need to, whatever you do, you need to do it trusting in Him. Mm-hmm. Whether you're helping out someone with benevolence, which seems to be the context of this, you might say, well, I don't know what's going to happen 6 months from now with my job or whatever, so I can't do this sort of thing.
Yeah. It seems to me that an underlying theme of the chapter is still going to be right here, that we have to trust in God. There's some things that we can't see. There's some things that we cannot predict. There's some things that we cannot forecast. Are we supposed to be worried about that? Solomon was not. And it seems to me he's trying to tell us that there's some things that's beyond our control we've seen that already in a lot of what we've seen. That there's some things that's just beyond our control. Sometimes life isn't fair, we've said. And Solomon has taught us, just beyond our control. But that's still okay. If our faith and our trust is in God, in the end, some things are going to work out. These are all good points. What else would you say, Les?
This was, of course, written in a time in which they didn't have ultrasounds. And people, I think, and many, get the impression when they read a verse like this that we don't know how the bones grow in the womb of the womb as infancy. Well, even if we have pictures and video of them growing, we still don't know how they grow. In other words, there's still an end to our
How does this happen?
A limit to our knowledge about everything that God has done. And there are some things, which Earl pointed out earlier, there's a verse similar to that a few chapters earlier, or maybe it was in chapter 3, Earl and I talked about it, that there are some things that we are never going to know about the things that God has done.
Yeah.
And we will not know the origin of the universe outside of His revealed word.
And why can't we get good with that?
You're right, exactly. It comes back to trusting God.
Which again, seems to be the underlying theme of the chapter. There's some things that we're just not going to understand. That's okay. You know, and you do not know the path of the wind. No, we can't change that. I mean, where is the wind coming from today? Where is it going to come from tomorrow? You or I cannot change that. God has control over those things. We should just be okay with that.
I think my son gets really discouraged because he witnesses a lot to people. Mm-hmm. And
he's in the medical field.
I'm sorry?
He's in the medical
field. No, it's the other
one. Oh, the other, okay. All right, right. Okay, got you.
He lives in Florida. And he will, you know, talk with people and they'll say, oh, I've tried that. Mm-hmm. And I've been everything. I've been an atheist. I've been an Hindu. I've been this, that, and the other. And he would talk to them, and he says, Mom, I just don't think that they hear. I said, that's all right, Rob. You've got to let it go because you've planted a seed, whatever. You've planted a seed that might not show till after you're gone, and you'll never know, but God knows. And you've done your part. Now you've got to let it go.
And a relationship with God is always based on faith. And we've seen that again even with Solomon. It's amazing to me. You know, in every book we go to, we're still going to come back to that same type of thing, the necessity of faith, you know, in the lives of those who would be the people of God. Even when it comes down to knowing the path of the wind, no, we can't change that, we can't control that. God's in control of that, and it's just the way that that is, you know, or how the body is formed in the mother's womb. You know, great textbooks have been written about how that takes place. We still can't fully explain, you know, some of those things. When does the spirit enter the body? You cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. There are some things that's just beyond our comprehension. You know, Scripture would teach us that time and again. And so when we look at that in the bigger picture of all that Solomon is saying, what's the importance of this? What's the significance here? I mean, why is he saying these things? What would you say? I mean, why is he even going here?
Well, part of it is because he has been observing life from under the sun throughout this entire book, and the evidence seems to indicate that God is not there. When you look at it from that perspective, all the things that happen to everybody, and I think he's saying that our relationship has to be built on what we believe and on faith and not what we see.
Yeah, I think you're right. Good thoughts.
I think part of this is trying to help us to understand that there's a difference between the physical world that we live in today and the spiritual world that we're looking forward to. And that's impossible for us to conceive. When you look in and study Revelation, you see the trying to explain what heaven is going to be about. How can we conceive?
Yeah, get a grasp of that.
Because it's far beyond what we can conceive. So they make it, you know, streets of gold and beautiful fruit trees and everything beautiful that we can imagine. so that we can try to understand that there's something far greater than we can imagine.
There are some things here that we can understand. Solomon puts it in terms where we can get a grasp of. Sow your seed in the morning and be busy in the afternoon. We can get a hold of that. We can get a grasp of that. We can make applications, you know, to those things. So much of what Solomon says is said to the common man, so to speak, and said in such a way that we can get a hold of that, we get a grasp of that, and we don't have to explain all the details. You know, the details are left to God.
Ecclesiastes is one of the most human books in the Bible, and that God seems to be using Solomon to say to us, I know, I can relate to what you're going through.
Yeah.
I know that I put you on this little orb in the middle of space, and there are times that it seems like it's just, why here? Why us? Mm-hmm. You know, David had those kind of, when I consider the heavens,
who am I?
Your hands, what is man that you are mindful of him? It's like, and all of the, so many of the questions that non-believers have regarding their non-belief and why they don't believe that there is a God are addressed in Ecclesiastes. This seeming randomness of life, the apparent or seeming meaninglessness of life, you're born, you grow up, you die. What is the point of it all? It's all addressed here.
That's right. And he's coming to those points.
And he doesn't want us to be discouraged about it.
That's right.
That's the thing. I mean, God is telling us this so that we can be encouraged because he understands what it's like to be a human.
And doesn't that seem to be more of the point now in chapter 11? Just about living life. Okay, there's a lot of things we can't understand. There's some things we can't explain. There's some things in life that's not fair. This life's going to end. This all looks bad. You know, but in the bigger picture, as he's now drawing his conclusions, it's like, this is okay. This is just the way it's supposed to be. This is the way God has made some things. And so, while you live here on earth, make something of your life. You know, you do something. Get up. Get out of bed. Go out, plant your seed. Be busy until evening. You know, it's these thoughts. Going into verse 6, sow your seed in the morning, and at evening let not your hands be idle. For you do not know which will succeed, whether this or that, whether both will do equally well. Maybe some different applications that can be made. I think Earl made a good point from this. You know, it could be talking about your youth and when you're older. Go out and sow your seed in the morning. When the idea, the analogy of when you're young and when you're old and the evening time comes, you know, be busy. You know, doing what you can do. Have you known those, or does this resemble you? As age comes upon us, you know, we just kind of think, well, there's just nothing left for me to do. You know, youth is past. My time is used up. You know, and have you seen people have just taken to the rocking chair and have done nothing in the latter years of their life? You seen that?
And yet the opposite is also true. You see, younger people say, well, when I'm settled, when I have time, I will do these things.
When I had a job, a full-time job, I asked this man, he was retired, what he was going to do. When he retired, he said, I'm going to sit on the porch and drink beer. Wow. He didn't sit very long.
Yeah. What a goal. And yet we have probably all known some like that. It's amazing. It is amazing how many people die within 6 months of their retirement. There's some statistics on that. I used to tell you what it was. I can't remember now. But so many people, they retire and they have nothing to do or find nothing to do, and they sit around and die in a short period of time. You know, it's amazing.
It's true.
You know, it really is. It is amazing. And yet that's not the idea here of what Solomon is suggesting at all. Whether it's in your youth or whether it's in your older age, to be busy. There's things to do. Live life. I mean, he's just trying to say, live life. You know, when you're young, when you're old, plant the seed in the morning, keep working in the afternoon. How do you know what's going to really work well? How do you know what's going to succeed? Maybe both will work equally well. I mean, you don't know.
One of the things that I found in my book, of course, working with people and getting into the older age, and they don't have anything else to do, so they die. But so often, their whole life is tied up in one job or one thing. Mm-hmm. And they don't do anything else because that's all they got to do is their job. Then they're working and working and working for the part of retirement. But when they retire, they don't have anything to do.
Right.
Because they never develop anything to do. And they die. Mm-hmm. Those that have worked and been very busy outside the job, they're involved in their church, they're involved in their family, they're just...
Retirement just becomes an extension of all of those things.
Now they still don't have any time, but they are still busy, busy, and they live.
Okay. Many of us have seen it. You know, someone who's just been absolutely career-oriented, that is life. You know, that's what they do day to day. It's the next rung on the ladder. That's all they can see. You know, live their life. Their kids are grown, go away, time to retire. And what have they have left? May have a lot of money.
Money.
But have no interests and seemingly nothing that they want to do. Seen that happen, haven't you? And are people that are just miserable? Even if they live a long time, they're miserable in that life. There's a better way. There's just a better way.
It seems like God was very disappointed in Solomon because he had given him so much. But yet, this is so, everyone can relate to it, and it's so important that all things work together for good, because he put Solomon's life so that he could tell it and warn others.
Fortunately, the wisdom that God gave Solomon, blessed him, was stayed with him through life and stayed with him through all the experience of life. And seemingly what is coming to be the end of Solomon's life was a time of reflection and a time where he had not lost that wisdom. And now he's making application for that for our benefit. I mean, that's for our benefit. We can learn from that. Look a little bit further here, verse 7. Light is sweet, and it pleases the eyes to see the sun. However many years a man may live, let him enjoy them all. Let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything to come is meaningless. We're kind of getting into a different phase here of the chapter and of the writing, when, you know, there's going to be a focus here on the days of your youth, to be contrasted with the days where you have age in the following chapter here. Think about some applications that need to be made. And what is Solomon trying to say when he says, light is sweet and it pleases the eyes to see the sun? So what's his point with that? What's he saying? What's the point?
Well, in the context, I'm wondering if what he's saying, the years when you have opportunities and things, and then you need to look, but even then you need to look ahead, because there are dark days coming and they're going to be made. You don't necessarily have that bigger than life. I don't know that at this point.
There's two applications that I'm seeing here, two ways to kind of view the passage. There's value in both. You know, the light could be the years of our youth, you know, and that can be very pleasing to us. There's another side, I think, where we can look at it as well, is that look at life, whatever your age may be, with a lot of zest. You know, I mean, this analogy can be used. I mean, if you sit around in the house with all the curtains drawn, you're closed, and it's dark all the time, I don't know about you, but that kind of gets on my nerves after a while. You know, that kind of starts riding on me a little bit. When Sandra and I got married, she moved to Michigan. I was living in Michigan, you know, and moved there. The first winter we had together there, we were about into February or something like that. I came in one day and Sandra was just crying. I mean, just boo-hooing. What is wrong? You know, it was one of those things where, you know, she couldn't explain at first what was wrong. She was just crying. I'm going, what is this about? You know, I find that happens from time to time. Okay? You can't explain, just crying. But she finally got this out. She says, like, does the sun ever shine here? Okay, she's from Alabama. We're in Michigan. It's February. And I said, It's February. It's not supposed to be sunny. You know, and it's cloudy like almost every day, you know, in Michigan in January and February. It's just cloudy because that's it's supposed to be that way, you know, in the north. And snow comes from those clouds. I never understood. I never could fully understand what she was talking about, that it was that the clouds are just getting me down. It's cloudy all the time. I never understood that until we moved to Tennessee. And I can remember one January day coming home from work and telling Sandra, I said, "Have you noticed outside?" And she looked and she says, "What?" I said, "The sun. Every day there is like sun and it's like January." And she's going, "Yeah." You know, if you close yourself in the dark, that does something to you. And if you're going to live somewhere where it's like cloudy all the time, that can have an effect on just your how you feel and how you look at some things. You know, just really think about that for a long time. I think maybe this is another application that can be made from this. Light is sweet, and it pleases the eyes to see the sun. You know, it's don't waste a single sunny day. I mean, in the north in the wintertime, if you have a day that's sunny and it's warm, if you got some wood to go cut and you got some work to do, that's when you go get to work. Take advantage of those days. They don't come too often. However many years a man may live, let him enjoy them all. But remember the days of darkness. Again, there's some different applications. We could be talking about, you know, our youth, and we could be talking about as we get old, you know, the light and the darkness. You know, I can see some application there. You know, there again, maybe the darkness is just the fact that, as Solomon has already made us well aware, there are some days where things just do not go our way. I mean, there are some difficulties in life. I mean, Solomon has seen it. He's experienced some of those days. He's actually seen the days when there were those who were righteous when bad things happened to them. That's not right. That's not fair is basically what he was saying. But we understand sometimes there are some dark days, even when you're trying to live as God wants us to live. Sometimes there are some dark days. And interestingly enough, Solomon says, don't forget those days. I'm going to tell you something. There are some days that I've had that have been some pretty tough days, you know, and I look back on them, and I don't want to remember those days. But on the other hand, there's been some value to some dark days. You understand what I mean with that?
The dark days help you remember the good ones
better. Well, it makes the good days so much better when you remember the dark days. In fact, sometimes we don't appreciate the light unless we've spent a few days in the dark. You know, and who wants to remember the dark? But let's understand, sometimes there's some value in that.
That's what I was going to do. You've got to have the contrast.
That's right.
If you had a dark day, how would you enjoy the sun?
If every day is sunny, how can you enjoy that, you know? Which is why nobody should live in Florida, I guess, where it's sunny all the time. You never, no, that's not a good example. Never appreciate you have to come from Michigan to enjoy the sun in Florida, I suppose. What are your thoughts?
The days. Every day is valuable because the days of darkness can be the days of when you spend in the grave.
Yeah, okay, interesting application. That's right. I mean, when you step back now and you start looking at the overall application that Solomon is starting to make, I mean, what he has said in the earlier part of the chapter about basically what he is saying is the necessity of our trust in God in all things. He's moving into this phase now where he's saying, like, you know, enjoy every day, make every day count, whether it's a good day, whether it's a bad day, you know, make every day count. Every day is of value. You know, we can see those points and make those kinds of applications. Live life with some zest, you know, I think is what he's saying. But remembering at the same time, it's all going to come to an end. You know, that's always there. Remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything to come is meaningless. Be happy, young man, verse 9. While you are young, let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the ways of your heart and whatever your eyes see. But know that all these things, God will bring, before all these things, God will bring you to judgment. So then banish anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body. For youth and vigor are fleeting. powerful passage. There's like a sermon and a half right here in this passage. You know, and what can be said. Let's start thinking about some points and applications that we need to make from the passage. Be happy, young man, while you are young. And let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Where do we go with that? Young man? I have to call you young man.
Yeah, I think of what Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount. Says, you know, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to have enough trouble of its own. Paraphrase. But it's so easy to be looking to the future and letting the future dictate your present. Mm-hmm. When I think the point Solomon's making here and Jesus makes is that we should not do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. You're right. You're right. I mean, there's going to be enough burdens in the days to come. Those birds will take care of themselves. What can you do today? What can be enjoyed today? Neil?
First two-thirds of this verse is the humanist manifesto in two sentences or three sentences. Mm-hmm. That's, they read the first two-thirds and okay, there's, the Bible says that I'm doing it.
Yeah, and that's all it is.
And the rest of the story, there you go. And the rest of the story is where the lesson is.
That's right. That's right. There's two sides of the story, as there always is, it seems. You know, while Solomon is now trying to help us understand and make the point, there's so much to enjoy in this life. Live every day to the fullest. Live life with some zest and gusto. Enjoy what you can in this day because we're not promised tomorrow. He's already made that point. You know, enjoy this day while you can. And for the youth, you know, he's saying, you know, enjoy your youth and enjoy being young. Give your heart, to the days of your youth. Well, we can understand that. And there are those who certainly do enjoy their youth, but without the understanding of what else is to come. There's a second part here that's just as important. You know, sure, we should follow our heart. We should do whatever our eyes see. But we should know that all these things, for these things, God will bring us into judgment. There's a limit, you know, on what we should do and how we should live our life. Powerful, powerful lessons for those who are young in particular. Many of us look at this passage and we're looking back on life to think about and understand what it's saying. But it's a powerful lesson to be taught, especially to those who are younger, to understand that, yes, you know, you're only young once. I mean, I remember hearing that in years past and thinking, yeah. Now I'm thinking, you're only young once, you know, and it's gone. You know, youth has passed by. You know, have you enjoyed youth and the things in that, you know, as much as you can? We're back to this idea of seize the day. You know, seize the day. I can remember a lesson being preached back when I was in my early 20s. That was basically, it was based on these verses right here. It was a little bit of an overview of Ecclesiastes, and then it came to this, it was a lesson for the young people, really. And I don't remember what it was called. I can't remember all the points of the lesson. But I got the overall picture of the lesson, which was, you're only young once, and there's some things that you can enjoy now like you can never enjoy again. Take advantage of that. But it has to be done in view of the big picture of what life really is. This life's going to come to an end. Sometimes we use the phrase of someone who's just really hanging out there on the edge, well, they're just sowing their wild oats. What's the idea of that? What do we mean?
They're taking risks that are beyond what they should in view of the fact that God is going to bring into judgment everything they do. Mm-hmm. I think that what he's, among the things that he's kind of encouraging youth to do is don't be too timid about life.
Mm-hmm.
You're young. Don't be courageous. If your heart has something in it that is, you know, if you want to go climb that mountain, mm-hmm. go ahead and
come do it. Because right. Later you might not be able
you
to do that.
You may not be able to always do that, so go ahead and climb it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's exactly what it's talking about. There's some risks to be taken in life. Sandra, again, you know, we like to hike and get out and do some things. Sandra thinks I'm like really a risk taker. I don't think I'm that much of a risk taker. A little bit, yes. You know, I try to explain to the girls, you know, it's like there's risk that's like, man, you really ought not do that. And there's some calculated risk, too. You know, I mean, I've got out in some places taking photos and stuff like that, you know, where maybe I shouldn't have gone. It was a calculated risk. Yeah, if I fall off this rock, I'm going to fall in that water right there, and I'm going to ruin a very expensive camera. There's a risk there. I'm not going to die. Where there's some places that I've looked at taking a photo from, and I'm not going to do that, because if you fall off that, you only fall once. You know, that's risk. You know, there has to be, some judgment has to be made. I kind of think that's what Solomon is saying. You know, the idea of, you know, enjoying life while you're young, the things that you can do when you're young that you might not be able to do when you're older. You know, it's like, you know, if you want to get out and do some long hiking, go and do that now. You want to go skiing, go skiing. Your bones don't break as easy when you're young. You know, there's some things like that. Get out and enjoy life. And yet at the same time, it all has to be within certain bounds. It doesn't mean you can just do anything. I've heard parents make excuses sometimes, you know, for their kids who are just acting out and are hanging way over the edge somewhere in life. And it's like, well, they're just sowing their wild oats. Listen, I've zipped up body bags on kids who have been sowing their wild oats. You know, you can go too far. You know, you can be stupid, not just in view of you know, doing something and harming yourself or killing yourself, but in view of eternity. And I think that's more of his point, what he's saying. Right? Enjoy life. Get out. Do some things. Don't sit around. You know, get out of the house. Enjoy life. You know, in view of the fact that whatever you do, you'll be judged on these things. And if we forget God in our youth, and haven't we all seen many who've done that? If we forget God in our youth and we just walk away from him, then that's truly a squandered. You know, they squandered life away. Life eternal sometimes, but so often we're thinking about those who never even look back at the Lord. That's not what Solomon's trying to encourage. He's trying to encourage us to look at life and go at life with some gusto. Enjoy all that God has given us to enjoy. You know, that is good and wholesome for us. You know, knowing that for all these things, God will bring us into judgment. Your thoughts.
I think I'd say that actions have consequences.
Absolutely. Always do. Always do.
Well, following the impulses of your youth is not saying unlawful.
Right.
It's lawful.
Right.
And when I think of this, I think of Lindsey Wicker. Here's a young man who likes to get out and go fishing,
sure.
Get out in the woods and enjoy himself, but he's doing it lawfully.
Yeah.
But he's following the impulses of his youth.
Absolutely.
He's having a good time. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Don't you wish you had that energy?
Yeah.
That's right. Point I thought was on my hand somewhere. Good thoughts. Anything else on that? Yeah.
We might need to be training ourselves in doing lawful, fun things, because if we're aspiring to go to heaven, we're going to get there, and all the good things to do are going to be lawful.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's right. It won't be lawful.
We might want to start now.
That's right.
When Earl mentioned, or maybe it was you, but whoever it was, that this person wanted to retire and drank beer on his front porch. Well, what I like, well, among the things that I enjoy doing is playing my guitar on the front porch. And the idea is that a lot of this is saying, go ahead and don't wait till you retire to play your guitar on your front porch. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and do that from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what, I mean, yes, you could be mowing the grass. You could be building the shed. You could be cleaning the basement. There's always something else that you could be doing.
So this is why Les's grass always needs mowed.
That's basically true. Yeah. That's because sometimes I play my guitar
on the porch. That's right.
So there's a balance to all this.
There is.
Solomon is trying to get us to smell the roses.
Sure.
And to see the sky and enjoy the sun.
Don't you wonder if he did that? Don't you wonder a little bit now when you read this? I mean, he's spent chapters in it talking about some things that he has done, accomplishments that he's made in life. Don't you wonder a little bit right now if he's looking back thinking he needed to smell the roses a little bit more? You know? I mean, this is part of what he has learned in life. You know, and so when we're coming along, sometimes it's necessary to take that extra vacation and spend some little bit of time away. You know, and so maybe we live in a smaller house because we do some other things, but we enjoy life. Because when you get older, you might not be able to get out and take that trip that you always talked about taking. That day may never come, in fact. And so, yeah, smell the roses in life. Good thoughts. So then, banish anxiety from your heart and cast off the troubles of your body, for youth and vigor are fleeting. These things will soon vanish. These things will soon fade away. So this is the advice to those who are young. Chapter 12. Well, even talk about shifting gears to the other side of the pendulum. You know, he's going to be talking about those who are older. The first part of chapter 12, we're still looking at youth when he says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Okay? What's the overall point? What's he saying? Let's not forget God when we're young. In fact, multiple reasons we can start thinking about why we should not think or forget God when we are young. I mean, I've known some who were old when they came to the Lord. I have known some, actually, who knew the Lord when they were young, but somewhere in their life they walked away from Him. They lived a very different life. And in an old age, came back to the Lord. I know one man that was baptized when he was 91. Baptized when he was 91. And one of my questions to him was, I said, Big Hargrove, why have you waited so long? Just stubborn, I guess. He was baptized. He lived 4 years after he was baptized. Three of those were years of reasonable health for a 92, 3, 4-year-old. At services always, participating with saints as he could at 92 years old. But you know, he missed a lot of years of happy and faithful service to the Lord. I think he started to realize that what he had put off for so long and some things that maybe he did in life when he was not a Christian was really not worth it in view of what he had now serving the Lord. If nothing else, the peace of mind that he finally had knowing that he was serving the Lord. When you're young and you are taught and you choose to serve the Lord, there are some incredible benefits that come with that. When a life of service to the Lord is taught and adhered to, how much different life can be, how much different marriage can be, how much different child rearing can be in the Lord, as compared to someone who later in life, even if they return to the Lord, you know, looks back on their life and the consequences of the life that they have led are very real and will be real until the day they die. The value of living the days of your life, your youth, for the Creator, the value of that is more than we could ever express. And interestingly enough, it's one of the hardest things to help young people see and understand, who are so caught up in being young, and in some cases so caught up in sowing their wild oats. I mean, the words of Solomon right here could not be more important, but very hard to teach and to get some to understand.
We're created in the image of God, and we are put on this earth to glorify Him.
Mm-hmm.
And if we spend first 90 years of our lives not doing that,
mm-hmm.
even if we come to the Lord
mm-hmm.
the 11th hour, I mean, He will accept us, and that's all well and good. But we did not honor God and glorify Him for those first 90 years. You want to waste it.
We've missed that opportunity. We've missed the joy that comes from that. We missed the joy of, in some cases of being married with a spouse who's also serving the Lord and the benefits and the blessings that come with that. In most cases, like in this case, there were sons who were born, who grew up and lived their own lives away from the Lord, no interest at all. And that was one thing he wishes that he could have changed some things in his child rearing. It was too late. I mean, his children had children who had children at that point. And so then here was generations now who did not know the Lord, even though he came to the Lord. How life can stack up on us that way.
That's a true risk taker if you want to wait till you're 91.
Yeah, that's right. That's a definition of a risk taker right there. Exactly right.
Well, God created us, and he knows what will fulfill us. And if we're not serving him, we're not living life to the fullest extent.
Absolutely. We are missing so much happiness in life if we choose not to serve the Lord in our youth. Absolutely. Lord willing, Wednesday night. Oh, no, wait. I was going to say chapter 12. Actually, I'm not going to be here Wednesday night. Ray is going to be teaching the class on Wednesday night, so that'll be up to him. Next Lord's Day, chapter 12 is where we are going. Thank you for your comments.